You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, November 10th, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live, no longer in the literal, never in the metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the booming downtown Brooklyn, home of Biggie Smalls, Shirley Chisholm, Sam Steeder and Michael Brooks, and Matt Binder, who has to commute from Queens. Poor him. We are obviously still working on that script. It was like muscle memory. I really almost just went into the same intro before. On today's program, Francesco Goldman, he's a journalist covering the case of the disappeared students in Mexico. We're going to talk about that and the bigger picture in Mexico. Is Mexico in a revolutionary moment, in fact? Also, new profile of Valerie Jarrett, why that actually matters and what that says about maybe some not good things that the Obama administration will probably pursue in the next couple of years. TPP, President Obama, he's in Asia. He's pushing it hard. Also, Rush Limbaugh, sort of making sense, but of course not really. I'll break that down for you. And
also, big news this morning as President Obama comes out, releases a big statement saying that the FCC should reclassify the internet as a utility and preserve net neutrality. This is huge news, and we'll talk about this much more. Also, Breitbart News issues a slight correction. Ever so slight.
Just really, really
they made
small.
A small mistake. They issued a slight correction. What's the big deal, people?
We all make mistakes.
That and much more coming to you in both the free and members-only better half portion of the show. And how do you get that members-only better half portion of the show? You do that by becoming a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. You simply become a member. It's less than a cheap cup of coffee that we could get now at any of the various corner bodegas that are surrounding us.
That's
in Brooklyn.
That's right. We are surrounded by dollar coffee places.
So do that. Support independent, progressive media. You can also support this show by buying all your stuff that you buy through Amazon through our Amazon link. You notice no difference. We get a slight kickback from Amazon. And that link is found at majorityreportkickback.com. You can also get fair trade coffee and chocolates at justcoffee.coop. Use coupon code MAJORITY and you get 10% off your entire order. And with that said, with all those ways you can support the Majority Report, we are now going to give you a wonderfully entertaining and informative interview.
Wonderfully entertaining and informative show. I don't know how entertaining this interview about murdered students in Mexico can be. But we will do our
best. Well, if it's leading to a revolution in Mexico, then...
I guess that could be entertaining. All right, folks, we will be right back. I'm just playing with you, man. All right, we'll be right back with Francesco Goldman.
Yeah. I never brag, how real I keep it, cause it's the best secret. I rock a vest, prestigious, Cuban link, flooded Jesus. Intellects watching Kathy Lee and Regis. My actions are one with the seasons. A tech squeezing, executioner, wintertime I rock a fuck. Mega popular, center of attraction, climaxing. My f***s, they be laughing. They album slipping coke off a 20 sit, Andrew Jackson. City lights spark a New York night. Rossi and Martini sipping. Sergio Tacchini flipping. Mad pies, low price. I blow dice and throw them. 45 by my manifest a do or die slogan. My rolling 10 M3s. 20 guards popping. Willies on Kawasaki's. Hip hop's got me on some more. Spraying shots like a drum roll. Blanking out. Never miscount the shells. My gun hole. I don't stunt. I regulate. Henny and Sprite. I separate. Watch a crab marinate. I'm all about text of good jokes and sex. Israelite books holding government names from Nets. MCs are crawling out every hole in the slum. You be alright like blood money in a pimp's. Pimps. Is made of trust of the Messiah. I'm spinning it to get higher. Earth, wind, and fire. Singing reasons why I'm up early. Trustworthy as a nine that bus early. Sunshine on my grill, I spill. Remy on imaginary graves. Put my hat on my waves. Latter-day Saints say religious praise. I dolo. Challenge any team or solo. You must be bugging out. New to my home on the furlough. Acts around. Who's laid up? Sharp and straight up. Mafioso.
We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
And I am Michael Brooks. Well, folks, I'm very proud to report to you that the problem is not on our end. That's kind of a relief. But the problem is not on our end. Let me run through this story briefly as best as I can tell. Basically, in this city, on the coast, there is a mayor and his wife, and the mayor's wife was positioning herself for a political career as well. This was sort of like a political partnership. Students from a local, I believe it was a teacher's college, were planning a protest that the mayor felt would in fact embarrass his wife. And police stopped a bus of students on their way to a protest. Took students out of the bus, and now it's unclear. I think that police did in fact kill some students on their way to this protest, or maybe they were already actually at a protest site. And then, according to investigations, the 43 missing students, which sort of galvanized the country, were handed over by the police to a drug cartel, who. Evidence indicates that they burned these students alive. Now, some of the parents of the students, for very understandable reasons, are not accepting that their children are dead. They want more accountability and more investigations. And, you know, this is galvanizing. There's mass protests across Mexico. And I think that what's fascinating here is that as far as I can tell, as an observer of Mexico to some degree, that this is implicating all of the currents in Mexican politics and Mexican life right now that are keeping this country in a really dire predicament. Now, you have a new president, President Peña Nieto, who is basically been focused on, you know, under the previous government. So you have three parties in Mexico. You have the PRI, which is the traditional establishment party, the party of the revolution, the 1920s. They've governed Mexico. They've mostly been in charge for 70-some-odd years, mostly. The party has populist roots, but there's certainly authoritarian and rightist tendencies there, and then more recently very neoliberal tendencies. Then we had two right-wing governments. First, Vicente Fox, who was a little bit interesting, actually. He sort of was relatively moderate. And then President Calderon, who came to presidency under really questionable circumstances and defeated a leftist candidate from another party, Jose Apedor, who claimed that the election was stolen from him. Calderon accelerated a massive offensive against the narco cartels, which really did turn Mexico into a war zone in certain places. You know, contrasting, you know, the kind of image of 1980s Colombia as the kind of height of narco violence and narco terrorism. Mexico is probably more extreme in certain provinces and certain states than Colombia. As an example, you know, certainly in terms of implicating civilians in that violence. You know, Colombian cartels were known for, you know, terrorizing populations, but not with the sort of quite the same level of brutality and systemic violence that you see from some of the Mexican cartels like the Zetas. And in fact, the use of social media, the use of torture and other means to terrify populations will go a long way towards explaining a group like ISIS in terms of undermining faith and confidence and really any sense of safety in any type of local institutions. I mean, one local newspaper, in fact, ran editorials once aimed at cartels in the area that they printed their papers, basically saying, please just clarify for us what you don't want us to cover so we don't get killed by you, because we don't understand why we're being murdered now and targeted as journalists. That's how extreme and obscene the situations become. Now, in conjunction with the war against the cartels, there's always been this notion that all of the political parties have linkage with different cartels and are compromised and corrupted by the cartels themselves. And so that's another aspect of it. So Pinheiro came to office a couple years ago. He's a member of the PRI. They've returned to power. He was kind of like a young, telegenic type of candidate who was attempting to rebrand the party. There were mass movement in Mexico several years ago that coincided with these elections, a youth movement that had a lot to do with a sort of Occupy type message, very radical, very revolutionary. And that's where the sort of energy of the street in Mexico is politically. Against the oligarchy, against the political corruption, against the cartels, against all of these forces of violence and sclerosis that have sort of held Mexico back, Pinheiro has sort of wanted to rebrand and sort of de-emphasize the violence of Mexico and position Mexico as a great investment opportunity, as a business-friendly spot. And the rage of this incident is compromising his mission significantly, and obviously rightfully so. And, you know, the protests continue. The attorney general recently said something the other day that he was sort of sick of dealing with this, basically. That's not the exact quote, but something to that effect. And so, you know, it remains. We will definitely cover this more. There's a lot of stories in Latin America having to do with U.S. policy, having to do with narco policy, having to do with narco gangs, having to do with mass concentrations of wealth and oligarchy that are still defining these places. And Mexico is a great place to start. And obviously, again, those are the fundamental issues around the border, around, you know, and even NAFTA is actually implicated in the growth of these cartels in some respects as well. So I'm sorry that we couldn't talk to Francesco Goldman today. He's a very smart guy. He's been covering this for The New Yorker. Maybe we'll try again if we can, if the phone situation gets resolved.
Let us get to this. So big news coming out today. President Obama has come out in full support of reclassifying internet as a utility. This would allow the FCC to enforce more robust regulations. And also, it would aid the protection of net neutrality, Obama said in the statement. To put these protections in place, I'm asking the FCC to reclassify internet service under Title II of a law known as the Telecommunications Act. In plain English, I'm asking the FCC to recognize that for most Americans, the internet has become an essential part of everyday communication and everyday life. Now, to give you a little background about what this means, is that how you have to take a look at what Congress did to last overhaul the telecommunications law in 1996. Basically, what they did was Congress established two categories. telecommunication services, and information services. Telecommunication services are like traditional, you know, phone landlines, your phone. And basically, this allows the FCC a more broader discretion in basically enforcing certain regulations and rules. Currently, as an information service, FCC can't do too much to do that. However, while this is good that Obama has come out, the president has come out in support of net neutrality and reclassifying the internet as a utility, the decision is still up to the FCC. What this means, basically, and FCC even basically, unfortunately, said it after the statement was put out, is that they will consider the president's opinion. And it basically sounds like they're just throwing it in with the other 4 million opinions they've received of people contacting the FCC when they announced they were writing up these net neutrality laws rules and they were going to make their final decision. 4 million responses. It's just amazing, though. To further go into what these what net neutrality in Obama's statement means, no blocking. If a consumer requests access to a website or service and the content is legal, internet service providers should not be permitted to block it. That way, every player, not just those commercially affiliated with an ISP, gets a fair shot. No throttling. ISPs should not be able to intentionally slow down some content or speed up others. That's called throttling. Increased transparency. The connection between consumers and ISPs is not the only place some sites might get special treatment. Obama also asked the FCC to make full use of the transparency authorities the court recently upheld, and if necessary, to apply net neutrality rules to points of interconnection between the ISP and the rest of the internet. No paid prioritization. Simply put, no service should be stuck in a slow lane because it does not pay a fee. That kind of gatekeeping would undermine the level playing field essential to the internet's growth. Obama continued that he is asking for an explicit ban on paid prioritization and any other restriction that has a similar effect. Now, again, the FCC is still in the process of making the new rules that could either protect net neutrality or offer these fast lanes so internet service providers can form partnerships with certain companies to give them faster access in exchange for, you know, money. To continue, though, what Congress's role could be in all this. While Obama's support of Title II reclassification may provide the political support that the commission needs to justify such a rule change, Republicans, however, are wary of the regulation, and they're obviously taking over the Senate after the midterms. And to give you an example of how Republicans view net neutrality, leave it to good old Ted Cruz, tweeting out this morning after Obama's proposal came out. Net neutrality is Obamacare for the internet. The internet should not operate at the speed of government. Which is insane to say, because what does that even mean? It's right-wing buzzwords just thrown together to make Sir Ted Cruz, our hero, said that net neutrality is Obamacare for the internet. Net neutrality must be bad. I mean, that's basically what you're going to get from the right wing now. I mean, if anyone had an opinion who considers themselves a Republican and isn't educated on what net neutrality is, I mean, he's currently the front runner for 2016 for the Republican Party, Ted Cruz. So here you have their intellectual hero, who they view as their best bet at taking over the presidency, saying this about net neutrality. You have Republicans taking over the Senate, and they already have control of the House. You don't think this is going to have a big effect on how Congress pushes for net neutrality and what they, whatever they can do to sway the FCC comes into play? It's scary. It really is. And in case you're wondering about AT&T, Verizon, and other internet service providers, AT&T previously basically scoffed at the idea of internet being reclassified as a utility, putting out an article saying that, you know, we could discuss why it shouldn't be, but let's tell you right now why it's a myth and it's never going to happen. And then you have Verizon, and I'm sure, you know, this is just looking through some quick, grabbing some quick examples. I'm sure this is the same with many different internet service providers, AT&T, which I just mentioned included. Verizon has frequently tried to switch back and forth to whatever benefits them when trying to, for example, take advantage of public infrastructure and funds. Many times going back and forth between, you know, whether internet really is a utility, whether they're a telecommunications service or just an information service. All in all, though, Obama, President Obama coming out in favor of reclassifying the internet as a utility is huge news, and he should be commended for it. And I really hope that this is the first of a new Obama we will see in the next 2 years, of him realizing that, you know, with the Republicans controlling both Senate and the House, complete control of Congress, maybe he's got to do whatever he can, like, you know, for example, what he said he will do on immigration, to say, screw it. I'm doing what I can from the position of presidency to get through whatever I can do. And trying to sway the FCC is a huge thing that he can do. And to people complaining about that all he is talk, on this issue, that's literally all he can do. And it is huge for him to talk. You know, president doesn't have overwhelming authority to just snap his fingers and make it happen. So when all he can do is talk, then that's what I want him to do. Talk about it as much as possible.
Speaking of which, let me try to get on our phone system. Matt, will you come over here and set the phones up? Thank you. While Matt does that, I'm going to read a few IMs. And again, apologies, folks. Shank Steele. Yeah, you can just whatever. This is a filler IM. My cat brings my corgi live mice. Scrap that. Back on track. No, we weren't back on track, but I appreciate.
I really want to hear this now.
Yeah, I appreciate the at least the beginning of the distraction tweet. You know, this has happened a couple of times to me in the last couple of shows, folks, because of course there was that time a couple of weeks ago where Sam had a family emergency and I needed to just jump and take over the show. And basically do it. And you guys all sent me great IMs, and I was able to, I think, you know, do an all right job holding it down. Gave you some sense of what's going on in Mexico. I wish I could give you more, but that will certainly happen in the future. And I think generally we're going to do a lot more coverage of South America on this show, because it really is incredibly important. You can join us at 6. They took the numbers down. The numbers aren't on the computer anymore. It's not on the computer anymore. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. No, it used to be taped up. It used to be taped up.
But we've been – how long have we been doing this that you can't remember? 646?
I don't know, because I'm understanding and reading about Mexico, for Christ's sake. I don't know, because I have a life. I don't remember phone numbers.
Whoa.
Jesus Christ.
Whoa.
God, coming at me with the banal. MR fan. Well, I'm glad you're here, Matt and Mike. My heart goes out to the people of Mexico. It's time to end the war on drugs. I look forward to the South America coverage. Two, Jay-Z. Wait, no, I already read that. James Meyerson, Mike, when will you have Mailman Mike and Captain Mike and Captain Carl on the show? I have no idea who those people are.
On YouTube, someone with the name James Myers, I wonder if it's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
The Majority Report will cover everything except Syria, because, you know, we've never.
Oh, we covered Syria a lot. If you mean, I don't know what you want us to cover about Syria now, but if you mean that we didn't do like a whole episode on conspiracy theories about chemical weapons in Syria, we debunked them. But we also opposed military action in Syria, and we've talked a lot. In fact, the last time we did something about Syria, I talked to Vijay Prashad a couple weeks ago on the whole ISIS strategy. I mean, the whole Obama strategy with Iraq and ISIS. Call us, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Let me read another IM. Mbwanara, two themes in the in the Guerrero state in Mexico. I apologize again for these pronunciations. I know I'm butchering them. One is the Colombianization, where the power military, narco gang, military police connections, which spread throughout Colombia. Yeah, there's truth in that. In that case, by intent as an anti-guerrilla, anti-peasant warfare in Mexico by adaptation, including Mexico gangs literally hiring former U.S.-trained counterinsurgency officers. Another is the persistent level of violence and repression in the southwest, like Guajaro, while Western attention flooded for decades to Chiapas, not entirely unjustifiably, but a romanticization which more or less ignored the significance of the governor of Guajaro ordering the police assassination of peasant protesters in 1995, and how this is connected to the opening up of Mexican agriculture to subsidized U.S. competitors and the destruction of last vestige of the revolution's helping peasants. Yeah, there's a lot to cover there. Candle Spice Latte, can you comment on the state of Matt's pile of garbage just to know you're settling into the new studio? Matt's working on it. He's getting comfortable in his new digs. It's sort of like an animal adapting to a new habitat. You know, you can't just like if you move a dog and you take away the bones and you take away the LLB futon, they're going to be unsettled for a couple of days. But what they do is they start to kind of move around and they sniff around, and that's what's happening. First of all, it's a process. He needs to find his favorite bodega to get his favorite brand of Monster Energy, Kill My Kidneys, whatever drink he's sipping on. He needs to get that in process. There's a little bit more vigilance. Sam's very neurotic about the new setup, obviously, so Sam's kind of snapping at him. But you can see that the cans are there. They're strategic. And I have no doubt by the time the start of the new year, the left side of Matt, nowhere near me, but the left side of Matt's desk will be a disgusting, filthy pigsty. You are calling from a 951 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from? And thank you for calling. They're unmuted. There definitely should be. Oh, hello? Go speak up. I'm sorry. I can't. Could you speak up? Yeah, I got to get close to your phone. Hello? All right, try us back. We are just having no luck with the phone.
Well, no, that the phone was working. That was
it was working for him too. That ended up being his line in Mexico City as well. Let's see, Matt in the BK. Must see Corgi video. All right, let's try this caller again. Hi, you're back from a 951 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from? Hello? All right. I don't know. Hey, relax. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. Okay. Ikkyu, you guys need to quit sniping at each other. It's ego-driven and boring. Whoa. I don't know that we're sniping at each other. We're just playing around. Matt snipes at me because he's ego-driven and boring. Just kidding. Come on. Irony. All right. I'm going to try this caller one more time.
What are you doing? This is not... I think we should give up on the phones, but go ahead.
All right, let me just do one more time, then we'll give up on the phones. 951, are you there? He's not. This is such a disaster.
Is it the same guy?
It's the same guy. Jermo, hi, Eminem. Hang in there. Saw Citizen 4 over the weekend. Walked away asking why government officials keep lying to us. Any ideas? I saw Citizen 4... with a friend who's also she's a journalist as well at the New York Film Festival several weeks ago. It's definitely worth seeing. It's a good movie. You know, I think there's a number of reasons why government officials are not honest. I mean, look, one is obviously when you have covert programs, that's not, you know, for public consumption from the perspective of government officials, right? So, you know, okay. Now, I think one part of the chain of dishonesty about this is that there's a lot of patronage networks and there's a lot of money to be made in the sort of post 9/11 world. There's contracts. There's, you know, there's systems that sustain these things. And anytime, you know, Dana Priest did great reporting on the sort of the proliferation of Homeland Security fusion centers across the country. And she even had this great little kind of nugget about, you know, who gets to have, you know, like armored SUVs escorting them around, as an example. Like these really ridiculous, you know, like the assistant to the assistant of the whatever gets a couple of bodyguards and a black SUV. You know, if you ever hang out in D.C., as an example – you know, when you first go there and you're younger, you might think, "Oh, whoa! There's a couple of, you know, dark tinted cars there, and they're going by. That must be, you know, some important official or something." And you realize if you spend any time there, and I haven't even spent that much time there, but just a little bit of time there, you're like, "No, that literally could be, you know, like Bob from whatever." And, you know, he wrangled that for himself. So there's a lot of perks in these systems, and there's a lot of bureaucratic turf to be opened, and there's a lot of contracts to be had. And I think specifically, you know, and then I think with this administration and with Obama generally, I do think there's a genuine terror of that if there is any type of attack that happens on his watch in the United States, that one, first of all, I think obviously he truly does not want that to happen, and I don't think any, you know, president wants that to happen. But I also think there was a sense, you know, remember the Detroit, the airplane from Detroit several years ago with the guy who tried to blow up his underwear mid-flight. And, you know, that incident definitely played a role in Scott Brown winning that special election over Martha Coakley, among many other things. But I think that the psychology of the administration, you know, it's not as extreme as that Dick Cheney, you know, 1% doctrine idea, but it's not that far off. And their calculation was this just can't happen, period. And then I, you know, and so I think these are a number of reasons that you saw dishonesty about those programs, and everybody should see that movie. Mr. Fan, let's hope Obama's honest on saving the net. I don't want this to change via the money. I think he's actually going to be pretty – I think that's genuine. Shank Steele, I can send the video. Field mice can jump really high when motivated. It's okay. Jay-Z, thoughts on Larry Lessig's super PAC failing to get anyone other than a sitting Republican elected? I guess that's your caller's problem there. I hear the wind blowing on the mic. On the matter of Citizen 4, did you guys see the article – about Berlin's digital exiles. I think that Josh Wharton probably had some good insight as to why Larry Lessig's PAC failed. I think the other thing is, look, we get that money in politics plays a direct role in all of these issues that are the defining issues of our time, inequality, climate, the just sort of debasement and corruption of politics in our public life. But it is still a boutique issue for a lot of people. It doesn't have the resonance and the it's just not a visceral issue for most people. And I think, you know, if anything, you know, I can't comment on the Constitutional Convention and everything. And, you know, I know Josh had some thoughts about Wolfpack and what the Young Turks are trying to do. But what they're doing a great job of is they're making that issue visceral. This isn't like, oh, sit around and have tea and we should have less corrupt politics. This is like literally, will our politics survive or are we completely in the zone of oligarchy? And I think we are obviously in oligarchic politics, but you know that reforming that is a key part of it, and it's got to be visceral and it's got to be aggressive, and it's got to be sustained. And I think maybe, you know, they're not at a point yet where you can capitalize politically on that sediment because the groundwork is not laid for it in the same way. It's not going to be at the top of people's agendas until it's really reframed and made much more visceral, and that's a long process. Let's try one other caller. It's a different caller. You're calling from a 310 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from? Please tell me you can hear me and I can hear you. No.
You try calling in with Skype.
I don't want to deal with Skype. Hello? I don't know what's going on with it. I mean, that one was weird. I mean, the other guy I could hear just fine. Dolink, I love Matt's rapping. And Matt, I have some messy genes. A lot of artistic geniuses live in messages and messes. Michael, you shouldn't demean him publicly about it. I just read the bestseller Tidying, and I'm using it to attack my mess. Serious, it's good. Lessig Pack didn't fail. It's a long-term effort. He and Wolfpack are really making inroads and laying the groundwork state by state. I actually can have mess too. It's just my trick is I just throw everything out. Sam Cedar. Lessig had two wins, a Dem to Ruben Galeago in the Arizona 7th, call in with Skype. Here, you want to help me call in with Skype? I've never called in with Skype before.
Just open Skype.
I'm opened. Let's see. Bob Flay. I came away from this election with an opinion I have not heard once in the corporate, quote, Hillary media. Dems need turnout, particularly black voter turnout, and didn't get it and lost. Do you really think they will turn out for Hillary after her vicious and racist campaign against Obama last time? She's running against him now. She can't win. Get another candidate. I think she could win. And I mean, I don't know if the campaign she ran against Obama. I mean, certainly some of her surrogates said things that were definitely really racially questionable, and it was an ugly campaign. But I don't think that people, and you know, the Obama campaign gave as good as they got, and that was, I think, why people like me, particularly, you know, I was in college, admired it because they were savvy, they were tough, they were able to kind of fight and push back against her. I don't know. I mean, I think it would be great if there was another candidate, but I don't see anybody out there who could possibly take that mantle.
Call our number.
I think that. Maybe, you know, I think on paper you'd kind of have to say Jerry Brown because he's, I mean, certainly not progressively. He's governed much further to the right and embraced some austerity and some energy policies that I really don't like and some prison policies I really don't like. But he's governed California pretty successfully, and he has a pretty long track record on issues that people used to think he was kind of weird for, and now he's, you know, just ahead of the curve on, like global warming and energy sustainability. And at different times in his career, he's advocated for some very progressive policies. So, you know, I mean, maybe it's, you know, his age or whatever. I'm not sure all the reasons why he's not fully considered, but I do think that he should. I mean, he should at least be in the mix. But besides that, I don't really know any other candidate. I mean, like, I think Bernie Sanders will run, and I think he should run. And if he runs, I would imagine that that's who I'll be supporting. But I don't know. I don't see a scenario where Bernie Sanders really could be a threat to Hillary in the same way that, you know, maybe potentially someone like Jerry Brown could be. And then after you get off of that, who is it? You know, you got – I don't think Martin O'Malley's going to do it. I don't think that, you know, any other sort of – I even actually besides Martin O'Malley, I don't even know anybody else who's really even being discussed as a possible candidate. You know, I guess, you know, probably I'm sure some people want to talk about Mark Warner, which would, you know, he wouldn't go anywhere. And I think the fact that he could barely beat a lobbyist in a re-election that was, you know, supposed to be incredibly easy probably is not bode well for him either. There's a problem with Skype. Are we ready to take calls?
You can take this call right here.
Okay.
917 number.
Yep. All right. 301. Who are you? Where are you calling from? Hello? 301. Is this like, are we like in no exit right now? Like, I feel like I'm in a play.
Hang up. No more phone calls. I don't
want to deal with no more phone calls. All right, hello, 301. All right, I will try one other call if somebody else calls in, but this is just getting silly. Umar Shamsi, this is really long, but let me try to get to some of it because he's thanking Matt for that great interview Matt did with Brianna Wu. Matt. Thank you very much for your brilliant and moving interview with Brianna Wu. That was a great interview.
Thank you.
Even from a purely selfish gamer perspective, girls being bullied out of a career in video games is truly tragic. We need to add creativity and vibrancy that women would bring. As a little push for girls on the fence, here are some role models for women who have made it in the industry, to vice president and executive producer of Halo, the executive producer behind the original Assassin's Creed. You know, this is just getting really long. Could you, let me see, all right, I'm going to, the most in-demand graphics engineer programmer in the industry, the scriptwriter for Uncharted series, and the co-creator of Portal, considering some to be the perfect video game. A minor quibble I had with Brianna is the impression she gave that, quote, white men and saving a damsel in success is just as big a video element of video games as it ever was. Some examples of strong women characters and supporting roles. I can't get to all of this.
I'll take a look at it.
Who is it? Yeah. It's Umar Shamsi.
All right.
King Kong. Did you see the Fareed Zakaria interview on Sunday where a Republican basically said Obama is a Republican president with his policies? No, I didn't. You know, I look, in today's world, Obama is not a Republican because the Republican – and actually as we move into the fun half, I'll have some stories that relates to that. But it's perfectly fair to say, I mean, that he governs as a – you know, as a very – as an old-style moderate Republican. I mean, look, he's a centrist, whatever way you want it. He's an establishment centrist. That's his politics. It isn't like a great mystery. I'm going to try one more call. And then we're going to go to the funny. No, I want one call to go through. I want it to, Matt. I'm
crying.
Sorry.
I'm crying.
I know. No, I apologize.
More. No more.
I'm sure this won't work, but let's just try one more. All right. 601. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Are you sure it's live?
It's absolutely
live. Hey, guys. It's Nate from Texas.
Oh! Give him everything we got. Keep him going. Nate, you here with us?
Char.
I can hear you.
Oh, my
Say,
God.
Dave,
thank
you. Put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
All right, Nate, now we're ready for you. What's up? What's on your mind, buddy? Are you messing with us? Don't pause
like
that.
I just want to let you know that, you know, congratulations on your...
It's a very delayed...
I want...
Yeah.
On your move to Brooklyn, I just got finished with a production of Arsenic and Old Lace, which is set in Brooklyn.
Oh, cool.
So I was thinking of you guys.
Thanks a
and
lot, man.
I wanted to talk a little bit about how during this election, it's been a little bit depressing. I'm not sure what's worse. I mean, the Democratic Party has very little messaging.
Right.
But then on the other hand, the voters seem to be voting for crazy people like Dr. Chaps, who thinks that Obama is possessed by the devil. And so when you have people voting for crazy people, is there really anything the Democratic Party can do at that point? I just wanted your thoughts on that.
You know, my thoughts was the other day, Sam mentioned some – I don't remember, but he mentioned some kind of Beltway process article about, you know, like, oh, well, now – you know, because some people really get into the kind of minutiae of the maneuvering around this stuff. Like, oh, well, now the Republicans will own it and blah, blah, blah. So people blame them for gridlock. I don't buy that too much, frankly, because the Republicans are already incredibly unpopular and they won anyways. And this gridlock strategy has worked for them. Why won't it? I mean, it's going to work in the future, too, unless there's a change on the other side. But I think the thing is that, you know, I don't want to let people off of the hook. I mean, obviously some – I mean, it's a very low voter turnout. So some of the people that are voting in a midterm are crazy to begin with. And they actually do believe that maybe Obama's possessed by the devil. So that's one thing that we do have to contend with. There are people who actually put Michelle Bachmann in Congress and people like that. But I think the other thing too is that, you know, so much of the analysis is just like most people have lives. They're not thinking about this stuff. And not that – you know, not that – I mean – it's one thing to think about this in a substantive way that actually matters because it does affect all of us. And that's, you know, obviously what we try to do on the show and what some other people do on the show. But most political coverage is the way it's covered. I would prefer to just be following sports or the movie business or music business or something. It's like, well, you know, this maneuvering, that maneuvering. I don't think most people pay attention to that stuff. I think they have some general sense that things are really dysfunctional. They don't work. And then they kind of, if they show up to vote, they make some impulsive decision. And that impulsive decision is probably going to be to go against whoever is perceived to have power at the moment. And that's going to be Obama and the party that holds the presidency. And those are, you know, the people who are even just making their minds up. I mean, don't forget, we do have a really clearly divided electorate. So we already have, you know, there's going to be a chunk. They're going to vote Republican no matter what. A chunk like us who are, like, you know, I guess basically going to vote Democrat no matter what, except maybe, you know, vote for Howie Hawkins over Andrew Cuomo or something. But I think, you know, look, if Obama did something serious on student loans and they actually ran like a real campaign in the midterms, they would have had better results. You know, I don't think it would have been like a miracle, but, you know, I mean, they not only didn't run progressive campaigns, they didn't even run like right-wing Democrat. They didn't run anything. They basically just as a collective were sort of like, those guys are really crazy. We're not that much like Obama. And that doesn't motivate your people. Thanks for the call, Nate. I don't know. Is it on delay, you think?
There's a big delay. I can
hear
it. It's
a big delay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, folks. All right, let me read one up more I am, and then we'll go to the fun half. But this has already been so fun already. Bush and Chains. Sorry, I missed the interview. You guys have a hard-on for Track Me Down. Don't know. Oh, well, you and your Orwellian big heads are one and the same, I guess. I just have to go to Belize, I guess. Enjoy Belize, dude. Okay. We are going to go to the fun half of the program where we have many fun stories for you and more IMs. And, yeah, sorry about it today. I guess there is a delay on our end, but with the guest, that wasn't coming from us, as far as we can tell. So we're going to be back on the fun half of the program. We're going to talk about Valerie Jarrett. We're going to talk about the TPP. I got some Rush Limbaugh sound for you. Matt has a hilarious story for you and a really positive story. And we're just going to keep pushing through. And it gets better. All right, we'll see you on the fun half.